Why are we willing to die for our countries? And how can ideology or even religion persuade somebody to blow themselves up? Well, ideology and religion, and indeed morality, often take the blame when we go to war. But our next guest, Mike Martin, argues rather boldly that the opposite is true. Rather than driving violence, these things actually help to reduce it. Fascinating subject. Why We Fight is the name of the book. And Dr. Mike Martin joins us now. Good morning. Thank you for joining us, Mike.
Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Good. I've got to ask you, and our listeners won't know what I'm talking about here, but we're connected on Skype, and the little picture that comes up of you, I'm guessing it's the palace in Bangkok?
It's almost. It's the Shwedagon Pagoda in Yangon.
Oh, I was close.
I lived in Myanmar for a year.
Oh, how wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. Oh, I'm nearly right. So 2 points out of five, then, I would probably get for
well
that.
Well done. No, yeah. Very good.
So, yeah, why are we willing to die for our countries? An interesting book to write this. And, of course, you've kind of gone the opposite of what the popular belief would be.
Absolutely. So my background is as an army officer, and I now am a conflict scholar. And my experiences as an army officer were basically the experience of combat is totally different to how people write about it and how people talk about it. So I wanted to understand more what it was that actually drove people to fight. Because there's a big question. Why do individuals sacrifice themselves for their country or for their religion?
I'm interested in your description of what you do. You're a conflict scholar.
Yeah, so I that means I both write about conflict. So this is my third book on conflict. I'm a visiting research fellow at King's College London at the War Studies Department in King's College London. And I also work as a conflict advisor. So I help the British government or the American government or other organizations achieve their aims in conflict environments like Afghanistan or Somalia.
How interesting. Okay, let's look at some of these problems about this. I mentioned in the preamble there that we would assume that religion and ideology often take the blame for this. And I guess if we think of people blowing themselves up or taking an aircraft down and everybody with them in a kind of act of terrorism, we kind of associate that with some kind of religious fervor, don't we?
We do, yeah. It's true, but actually, if you look at it, and you also mentioned morals in your introduction. So moral codes and religions and ideologies are actually the rules of our groups, if you like. Those are the ways that we solve problems within our groups, our social groups. And humans actually live in social groups, in evolutionary terms, to escape violence, because groups are non-violent places. So actually, if you look over the whole of human history, these three things, moral codes, religions, and ideologies, have actually helped humans build bigger and bigger groups. And that, over human history, over the last 20,000 years, has actually driven down rates of violence more than anything else.
That's very interesting. And when you look at the types of violence that people perpetrate, we could talk of a war, which I guess is a whole different ball game from some individual who would perpetrate their own act of violence, if you like.
It is very different. So what's interesting is humans are animals, right? I mean, we're part of the animal kingdom. We are an ape that just has slightly less hair than the other apes. And all animals, individual animals, fight each other for food, for resources, for territory, all those sorts of things. And if you look at what causes human murders, one of the main things that causes human murders, and by the way, 95% of murders are committed by men worldwide.
Really?
And of those murders committed by men, about two-thirds of them are caused by status disputes. So this is men fighting over status.
Yeah.
And that's your individual violence. And when you look at wars, what wars are is basically group violence, right? These are two groups that are fighting each other. And it can be between a tribe, you know, two different religious groups, or it can be between nation states, as we've seen, you know, over the last 500 years. And all that is that's the violence between individuals, i.e. caused by status, but timed up. Because the one big difference between humans and our closest relatives, the chimpanzees, is that we're able to form much bigger social groups. And so it's bringing those social groups together, and then they compete through status disputes. And that's effectively what causes war in evolutionary terms.
But the people who have to fight that war are, in the main, doing it because it's their job and it's what they signed up for. And that opens a whole other can of worms, doesn't it?
It does. It does. So just one thing, I think for most of history, it hasn't been a job. It's been more of a vocation. You know, we live now in a certainly in Europe, you know, the UK, America, we live in a very professionalized society. But I think there's an interesting question. And this is actually the question my brother posed to me before I went to Afghanistan. The first time I went, I was 26, and we were going bowling with his family, as you do before you go off to war.
Of course, of course.
And he said to me, he's my older brother, he said, "What, Mike, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Why are you, you know, you could go and do any number of jobs or careers. Why on earth are you going to Afghanistan to risk yourself?" So you're absolutely right, it is a job, but why did I choose that job? What was it that drove me to fight? And actually my brother's rather direct question started me thinking. And actually the reason I went to fight in Afghanistan is because I wanted to prove myself. And when I got there, I found that a lot of the other soldiers that I was fighting with, both against on the Afghan side, the Taliban, and on our side, a lot of those people were looking to prove themselves as well. And they were looking to, by the way, prove yourself is to, you know, prove your status.
Yeah.
And they were also looking to belong to their social groups.
That's interesting. I'm sure you're aware that shortly after the US entered World War II, the US government commissioned somebody to create a series of films to convince the American troops basically about the righteousness of the war. And actually that was called Why We Fight as well.
It was indeed.
Yeah. And of course they tried to answer that question, why do we go to war? Why do we fight? And would it not be fair to say that probably, as if you're looking at the US, the last war that there actually was a decent justification for was the Second World War. And since then, it's really more about the government explaining why we ought to go to war.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very true. I mean, particularly in the last 20 years, we've had some very controversial military actions. But what's also interesting is, you know, Winston Churchill said, "I intend for history to treat me very well because I intend to write it." Mm. And one of the reasons we look at the Second World War as this defining event, I mean, of course, it was an epochal defining event.
Yeah.
But the Allies won that war. And so to an extent, they wrote the history of it. And so, of course, that is a justified war. But we never talk about the fact that Allied troops effectively executed German prisoners in the advance from Normandy because we won the war.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, Korea and, well, that was a score draw, and Vietnam was a loss for America.
Mm.
And these post-2001 wars have been, frankly, disastrous.
Yeah.
And that is why, one of the reasons why we find it hard to justify those wars is because we lost them. And so we don't control that narrative in the same way that we did for the Second World War and for the First World War.
If you were somebody who was unfortunate enough to be serving in the Second World War, I've talked to many of them, I've met many of them. They do have a kind of determination that it was to protect their country, and it was to stop, you know, Hitler overtaking what was ours. When you talk to people who are in the Vietnam War, and I've done the same thing, a lot of them have no clue why they were there or what was the reason they were fighting these people they couldn't even see most of the time.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's right. And And it was, you know, the domino theory that led to Vietnam was tenuous. But I think the main point that you're trying to bring out there is absolutely right, which is that we actually fight to belong to our own groups. We don't really fight because we hate the enemy.
Yeah.
We actually fight to keep our groups together. That's the main focus. And in evolutionary terms, that's what we're trying to hold on to.
Yeah.
Membership of a cohesive group, because a cohesive group keeps you safe. It gives you lots of sexual partners, and it gives you resources. And those are three things that a cohesive group gives you in evolutionary terms. And that's why we fight for our own people.
Now, to bring us bang up to date, I guess a modern war is, for want of a better expression, it's terrorism. And the public are finding it very hard to get their head around fighting against somebody who doesn't mind dying in any way, because they think they're going to a better place with God knows how many virgins and all the rest of it. That's yes. really hard to fight against somebody with that ideology, isn't it?
It is, and I noticed you use the word ideology there, and it is something that is quite rare, you know, an enemy who's willing to deliberately sacrifice their life, and that is, I think, why we or our governments and leaders have relied on fairly simple narratives like terrorism is driven by a murderous ideology, and therefore in order to defeat terrorism, we need to fight against that ideology. I mean, that was the whole premise of the war on terror. But my question is, how do you fight against an idea? That's yeah. very, very difficult,
yeah.
particularly when we're actually talking about the physical manifestations of the violence.
Yeah.
And so to go back to the book, my book, Why We Fight, which is out today, by the way.
Ah, fantastic.
Great timing. To go back to that idea, it's actually about a bunch of people, these are the sort of lone wolves, who feel that their position in society is not secure enough. Often they're second generation immigrants, or they are a lot of converts are represented in people who join ISIS. And so these are people who are not secure in their own sense of belonging. They're not secure in their status. And that is what drives them to commit these acts, because they feel that that final act of suicide, if you like, affirms their status, affirms their position within their new religion if they're a convert. And so that is actually what drives them to violence. So to come back to how our governments deal with terrorism, you turn it on its head. Rather than trying to defeat the ideology, let's help these people belong. And the way you do that is through sports clubs, youth clubs, and things like that, particularly when people move from the family to society, so 16, 17, 18, you know, 20, that sort of age. People are, as we know, teenagers are often trying to find who they are. Help those people belong into the society that we all live in.
Very interesting point. And what about people like Mr. Donald Trump, President Trump, who, when you kind of look at his rhetoric, it's almost about him, isn't it? He's a bit fed up with Kim Jong-un, and he's going to rattle his cage and see what happens. And we're kind of innocent bystanders in that kind of fight, aren't we?
Absolutely. I mean, I started writing this book 2.5 years ago, and, you know, the main premise is that fighting is about status and belonging, and along comes Trump. And if ever there was a man who was driven by his own sense of diminished status or being wronged, then it is Mr. Trump.
Yeah.
But also Putin and Kim and, you know, Macron is driven as well. I mean, not to war, but certainly he is driven by a sense of who Macron is. And I think that's true of many leaders. They wouldn't get to be leaders. It's pretty hard to become a leader of a country. And I think you have to have a strong drive for status to become a leader of a country. That doesn't happen by accident. And once you become a leader of a country, then you look around and who are your peers? Well, they're the leaders of other countries. And so these status disputes continue between leaders on the international stage, as they did between tribal leaders or chiefdom, you know, chiefs of chiefdoms in the past.
Except, of course, that now they have the ability to obliterate most of us with one fell swoop, don't they? Which in the past it was going to end in a war, whereas now it may end in disaster.
Absolutely. I think that's true. And that's interesting, because we're at this very interesting stage at the moment in the world. If you look at the statistics of violence today, believe it or not, is the safest era ever to be alive, both in terms of murder rate and war deaths. Wow. And we do see wars, but they're increasingly confined to areas where war has become endemic. So like Afghanistan's 40 years now, the current war, Somalia, another sort of 35 years. But most of the world is becoming more and more peaceable. But as you say, history is you know, a trend of progress. Mm-hmm. But of course, within that macro, that long-term progress, there's dips. And it seems that we may be entering a dip at the moment. And as you point out, you know, is this dip the one that launches us into a war that we cannot bounce back from?
Absolutely. On a much lighter note to finish, Mike, what about personal fights? Is what you've learned useful to you when maybe you're out in the street and somebody, you know, bumps into you and gives you a hard time? Have you got mechanisms that you've learned to deal with people that want to fight you?
Well, do you know what? I can't remember the last time that someone wanted to fight me. But as you know, the gift of the gab is the best thing, isn't it?
It is.
A few years ago, some friends and I drove across the Democratic Republic of Congo, and we actually wrote a book about it, Crossing the Congo. Very interesting journey. And people always said to us, you know, did you have weapons with you? What did you do? I said, no. There were three of us. The way that we talked our way across that country with all of its little wars was just by speaking to people.
Brilliant.
And, you know, a smile and a handshake goes a long way.
Absolutely. Great way to end. The book is called Why We Fight. As you say, it's out today, and you can get that from our own website, in fact, save people having to go and dig around and look it up at tre.radio. Mike Martin, thank you so much. It's been fascinating to talk to you, sir.
Thanks, Bill.
Have a great day.
You
cheers,
too.
Em. Bye-bye.
You too.